James, I feel like I've been in my basement for weeks.
It's exactly where you need to be. Mm-hmm. Listen to you. You sound like Typhoid Mary.
I do. And I actually feel better this morning than I have in a couple of days, believe it or not. Mm. The secret is tea with honey and two fingers of Jim Beam.
Ah, I see. So. In that order or mixed together in a big jug?
Oh, together.
What?
Absolutely, okay. Together. In a nice turvis so it stays warm for a while.
Ah, okay. I see.
I actually picked up the Jim Beam honey flavor to add to it, and it's just like this sweet nectar. And that way, even if it doesn't help the sore throat and the cold, I just fall asleep.
I was talking to my neighbor yesterday, and he said, of course, you know, from a safe distance. And he said, how are you guys doing on supplies? I'm like, well, if you look in our fridge, it's mostly cheese, so I think we're okay. And he said, yeah, I went to Total Wine and stocked up, too, on supplies. I'm like, Total Wine? They sell groceries? He's like, no.
I know our Total Wine has a little cheese and salami and sausage cooler as you're walking out the door. So I guess you could get a little bit of that there.
Yeah, no, he stocked up on whiskey. And his new thing is non-alcoholic German beer. And apparently Total Wine is a huge selection. So he handed me one yesterday as we were burning this giant brush pile. And I had it, and I was astonished at how good it was.
Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So maybe we'll have to talk about that in the future.
Yeah. Well, look, we know that non-alcoholic, low alcohol, low calorie is a big trend going forward. So I guess, you know, we tend to think of America as being, you know, the bubble here where all these trends are coming from. It would make sense that the Germans would put something together that's good since they know how to brew in the first place.
Exactly.
So anyone, hi, everyone. We are blah, blah, blah. We're going to talk a little bit about what's going on in the world this week, but we are going to relate it back to brewing and hop growing because that's what we do. And let's face it, neither one of us is a medical expert or should be listened to about just about anything.
Hey, now, I resemble that remark.
What, you're a medical expert?
No, that I should not be listened to.
Oh, God, yes. So before we get into what's going on, we did, just to pimp the Patreon stuff for a little bit, we had some folks on our hopnologist group asking questions about soil samples and reading soil results. And we had an impromptu live chat with our Discord hopnologists last night for about an hour and a half, talking through line by line what soil results look like. It was mm-hmm. fascinating. It was super helpful. It's great to see all of the folks working with us, seeing them trade results and, hey, I'm seeing this, I'm seeing that. It just has blossomed into this wonderful community resource. So I encourage you to get in on the fun and check that out, patreon.com/hopnology or just the hopnology.com website. And you sort of can't miss it. It's lots of arrows and bells and whistles pointing you in that direction from the website.
It's a good way to stay social in these days of social distancing. Mm-hmm.
Very true. Very true. We were all apart, but together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, speaking of apart, but together, yeah, I'm in Connecticut. We are in the house. I've got two teenagers, so that's fun. And the line I mentioned to you earlier, James, that I had seen was that, you know, if you see me muttering to myself, don't worry about it. I'm just having a parent-teacher conference.
Exactly.
That's been interesting. We are catching up on our movies and board games and whatnot. And my wife and I are learning how to play games on the Nintendo Switch with them. So that's been fun. We're not good at it, by the way.
Well, we live in the country, and we rarely see our neighbors. And this is just like a staycation, basically, because we don't go anywhere. We don't do anything. I know there are other folks that are freaking out right now because they can't go out to bars and they can't do their social bit. But for we introverts, yeah, meh. No big.
Yep, same with us. We are a family of introverts, and you know, we miss our friends, we miss our family, but that's what the phone is for. That's what texting is for. And we are, yeah. I'm not even able to really conceptualize of that nagging feeling of, oh my God, I need to get out there and be with people. It's just not it's not part of my psychology or biology, for that matter.
Yeah, people are the worst.
one of my favorite Bloom counties of all time is Opus saying, I really don't like people. There are certain individuals I'm very fond of, however.
Exactly. Exactly.
I think that was probably 20 years ago before introvert became a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it was probably the first clinical definition of introvert I've ever seen in print.
Yeah. People are stupid. A person can be intelligent, thoughtful, forthright, and rational thinking. But people together as a group, when you get into the group think mentality, i.e. toilet paper buying, what the hell? I don't get it.
No, I don't either. Well, that and the spring breakers in Florida, just unbelievable to see what's going on there.
Yeah, and they weren't concerned about the gonorrhea they were going to get.
Well, no, that's the least of their concerns.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of like a souvenir.
Is that what it is? I got my spring break badge. Uh-huh. Gross. My spring break badge requires penicillin.
I kept the script. I hung it up.
Mm.
Oh. So, anyway, everyone's living this right now. I hope everyone out there is safe. And the beauty of most of our listeners, I imagine, is you're farmers. So you're able to get outside. You probably don't have a ton of person-to-person contact at this time of year. And you can make things work around that a bit. But we do hope in all seriousness and all candor that everyone is safe, everyone is well, and everyone is taking precautions. Because as we've all seen, the only way this is going to end anytime soon is if we all take one for the team and stay away from each other.
Right. But it does present some issues that really have never, that are unprecedented for pretty much most markets. And that is, well, there are several factors, so let's just talk about them. Certainly for the agriculture sector in the United States, as I would imagine for many places in the world, makes use of non-resident labor. And with borders being closed and production seasons ramping, certainly in California and Texas and places like that, that make use of what we call H-2A visa labor, so non-resident laborers that come for the entire year, that program shut down because, well, the borders are closed. So think about our large production friends who have to bring in 100, 200 H-2A laborers to actually work the crop and the yard, and now they don't have them. And the season is ramping, and Lord knows how long this is going to take to work its way through the system. So What's going to happen to their crop? What's going to happen to their fields? How are they going to make do without the labor that they would normally bring in?
And it's a question without an answer right now.
Right.
We don't know what the time horizon is on this.
Nope. We don't know. And like I said, there's no precedent. What we do know, per all of our labor talk of late, is that it's going to be a problem. How are they going to get it done? Now, granted, there's probably plenty of people that are out of work right now, and so one could make the argument that, well, why don't those people go out there and do it? Maybe, but you have to realize that these non-resident laborers, in many cases, they're the same people that have been coming back year over year over year over year. They're already trained. You don't have to retrain anybody to do anything. So even in the best case scenario, where you could get local labor to do your work during these times, you're going to run into a skill issue because they just don't have it. So no, there's no way around this, that the labor issue is going to have play a major role in getting the crop produced and managed in the early part of the season. Harvest will be another thing. We'll see what happens down the road, what that looks like. But as much as I drone on about timing, everything is timing and hops, if you don't have the labor to address the actions that need to happen at a certain time,
yeah. And you know, it's interesting, to your point, with all the unemployment that's going on right now, if you were in a bind for, you know, labor for this time of year, you may all of a sudden find that there's a lot more available than you had before. But to your point, you got to train it
right
train it train them
yep So that was a an interesting observation I had with a friend of mine yesterday on that topic, saying, yeah, we were going to bring in H2A labor. Now what are we going to do? And I hadn't thought about it. And it's not just hops, but pretty much anything that's grown in California and the West Coast on a large scale for horticulture crops, not corn and beans, but horticulture crops, make use of H2A labor. And there's going to be some problems.
Yeah. And I would say easier to solve for most of our audience, smaller scale, than, to your point, the folks out west who use hundreds upon thousands of people. They've got a huge issue facing them, without question.
Let's play this out, because as you know, in my day job, it's my job to to basically get ahead of all this kind of stuff. So if you don't have the labor in the large market to do the work you need to do to get your typical yields on a large scale, what's going to happen?
We're going to get less supply.
Correct.
Into the market.
Right.
Which means demand will... let's assume demand for beer stays constant. We'll come back to that whole side of things later.
Yep.
But less supply means it changes the supply-demand curve and prices go up.
Correct. So hops that, like even Cascade, where we've been harping on Cascade for a long time, saying, yeah, well, you know, it's not even worth growing because it's like $2.30 a pound. There, even if the stockpiles, which there are plenty of stockpiles, the strategic stockpile of hops, are already processed, that will get consumed in one way, shape, or form. So what we can expect to see, I think, in the best case scenario, is the fact that we simply are going to see lower yields because we don't have the labor force on for the large producers. And that's going to create a dip, like you said, in supply. We're going to consume, the brewers are going to consume the raw materials that are already produced in the supply chain. So we're going to see a dip that's going to probably be, I'm going to say, 8 to 10 months after this year's harvest. So it'll be, probably this time or a little later next year, where suddenly we're going to start to see changes in pricing in the hop market because those hops are no longer as available as they were.
And there are a few ways to handle that as a small grower, because we've talked so much about building relationships and making sure that you've got a level of trust between you and the folks you're working with. You know, you can ride the high prices, which won't last forever, or you build a relationship early of, look, we know you're getting gouged. This, you know, that used to be $10 a pound that you have to pay $22 now. Yes, we had cost issues with getting our crop together this past year, but we've got it. We're able to do it at $13 a pound, which is higher than the rate was last year, but a lot better than you're getting gouged for. You can use this to your advantage, mm-hmm. again, thinking a year from now, to build that trusting relationship.
Right. Brewers will be willing to look at other places. If we're going to consider that the market, the production market in the Pacific Northwest, where, you know, with an asterisk, of the proprietary varieties are grown, those are going to be the ones that are, those are in the highest demand, those are of the higher price points, and those are going to be the ones that are going to get hit the hardest in terms of production, should all of this hypotheses that we're talking play out, to the point where brewers will be in a position where they're experiencing financial difficulty because of the shutdown. People aren't able to drink even if they want to, certainly for taproom sales. Think of those brewers that now that don't do any distribution. It's all taproom. So they're going to be experiencing cash flow problems. So they're going to be looking to, they're not going to frankly be able to afford those really expensive hops.
True.
So that puts our small scale growers in a much better position to be able to compete now, because not only will they have fresh stuff, you know, from that current season's harvest, but also it's varieties that are opened and free and able to sell, and of a much larger, wider diversity of varieties than are produced in the Pacific Northwest for, quote, conventional stuff, right?
Yep.
So this could be, you know, spin it so that you can you know, make a win out of this when you're presenting it to your brewers, and you might be surprised that you'll get some good response.
Sure, sure. And there's, you know, at least I know we're seeing it here. I'm sure you're seeing it too, the emphasis on community and helping each other. That, I hate to say plays into it, but that's part of your marketing and part of that relationship building. Mm-hmm. Hey, you know, I know you, again, I know you're getting screwed by the big guys. I'm here to help.
Right.
I was less impacted on a relative basis, and I can get you what you need. People don't forget things like that.
Right. But, you know, back to our previous episodes, you can't give them crap.
Oh, very true. Very true. Quality above all.
So, you know, it's make use of that, of your scale, right? How can you take what others might see to be a detriment or a hindrance, i.e. your scale, and how do you make that work for you? You make it work for you in the fact that you need less labor to get things done, that you can utilize the workforce that's at hand. So there's a lot of ways you can spin this if you find the entire market is labor and resource constrained. You're not as constrained, so use it to your advantage.
Yeah. Now a question I've got for you, James, and again, it may be too soon to tell, but this time of year, getting started on the farm. Now, ideally, you've planned ahead. You've got anything you need in terms of pre-emergence, in terms of hardware. But are we already starting to see it become difficult to get farm supplies and herbicides and fertilizers and all those types of things?
Not so much. The FDA worked with the government to have agriculture identified as a critical industry, so as to be exempted from a lot of the crazy ridiculousness that's going on right now. And we also know that the transportation infrastructure is operating because it's also a critical industry. So I don't expect to see the supply chain be problematic. However, this is a big however, the manufacturers of those raw materials may be a different story because they may not even be in the U.S. So certainly a lot of conventional fungicides and herbicides and whatnot are produced ex-US and shipped in. But if anything at all, we could expect to see a slowdown in the ability to get things on hand. Not that it will become unavailable, but you might see a slowdown for some of the more specialty fungicides and whatnot. But I would expect things like fertilizers, because most of those are produced domestically, unimpacted.
Mm-hmm. And it seems that shipping, for the most part, is moving around the country pretty normally. I mean, there are places like Amazon, fulfillment places are prioritizing what they're shipping you.
Right. But, you know, you're not ordering through Amazon. So,
yeah.
You know, it's like going to your co-op or going to crop production services or someplace that deals in specialty ag. They have large warehouses all over the U.S. and in North America too, Canada, and even in northern Mexico. So, and they've been ramping since November.
Sure.
So they've got stock. It's just taking a little extra time to get it to where it needs to go. So I'm not expecting to see any shortages, certainly for the specialty type stuff that we use at all. And fertilizer shouldn't be a problem.
So, yeah, that is good news in terms mm-hmm. of being able to get what you need.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you're going to see a toilet paper scenario here where people start hoarding any of that type of stuff. There's no logic. I say that because I was in the supermarket 3 or 4 days ago, and I was cutting through the pet aisle. And I buy all my cat food online anyway, but I was walking through the pet aisle, gutted.
Mm-hmm.
And the supermarket was fairly stocked with everything else, but except for the cleaning aisle. But, you know, I guess, you know, everyone went in there and bought every bit of cat and dog food they could find.
Well, I think if you're going to be sheltering in place for 2 weeks or more, animals got to eat too.
Yep.
So what are you going to do?
And they're not eating my stuff.
Right. And if you're buying it on Amazon Pantry, they're not shipping. That is a priority right now. So what are you going to do? So I get it. I understand. Yep. But damn.
A friend of mine went the other way, and they went out to Tractor Supply, and they bought half a dozen chicks. mm-hmm. and set up a coop at home. You know,
yep.
giving the kids something to do.
Exactly. Yep.
Which I thought was a cute idea. Okay, back to this.
Back to this. Yes. Let's talk about this. So we talked about raw materials, and I mean, if you don't have your twine by now, there ain't virus quarantine aside, you ain't getting it. So I'm just not even going to go there. But your production materials shouldn't be a problem.
We've been saying that since September.
I know. Yeah. So, and just my little insight about labor and how it might impact the market further down the line. But let's look at maybe the other side of that. So trying to sell into an industry that is going to be hurting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to your point before, we don't know with the breweries how they're going to come out of this, what kind of cash flow they're going to have. Look, the brewery in my town, the one brewery in my town, they just celebrated their 1 year anniversary, and they seem to be doing well, but no one thought this was going to happen.
Right.
That they were going to have to shut down for weeks to months. That is huge for any small business, whether they're new or long term, because cash flow is king.
Cash flow is king. For a long time, you know, 10 years, the drive has been towards taproom sales, because that's where the cash is. You know, 70-80% of the liquid that a taproom pours into a pint glass is profit, if you can sell it on site. So why wouldn't you do that, as opposed to 8-10% in some sort of packaged distributed form? So the drive has been towards taproom, selling an experience is another thing that we hear all the time, like a new brewer, you know, selling an experience in your tap room. How to do that? Well, right now, you got nothing. So you've got no income. Now, granted, your costs of operation are also fairly low.
This is true.
So you might think it's a wash, right? Not so much, because how many of those breweries have paid off their massive capital investment in all their equipment? None.
No, none.
So none at all. Unless your creditors are going to suspend your requirement to pay them, you have no income, but yet you still have to pay your bills.
And meanwhile, you still do have expense. Certainly, you've got rent. The odds are you've got brew kettles going, and you still need to finish that process. So it's not like you're sending it. It's not like you're not working, even though the tap room is closed.
Right.
I saw a flurry on Instagram over the last week or so of tap rooms listing all the local beer shops that they've been dropping cans off at.
Mm-hmm.
Because tap rooms are, I know, at least, you know, several of the ones I frequent, they've got their cooler full of cans to go, and they're all trying to get those out of the tap room and into the stores, because those stores, at least in some places, will remain open.
Right. That's the
critical,
way
critical resource getting that booze into people.
It is. That's the way it is in Wisconsin right now. All restaurants, tap rooms, everything is closed. Mm-hmm. You can get takeout, but in most cases, the takeout sales can't support the operating costs. So people are just closing. They're saying we can't function this way, so we're just going to close it. So if you don't, as a brewer, if you don't have packaged material in the marketplace, you're not moving any product.
Yep.
And even though it's a lower margin, we're seeing around here where I live, we're seeing our local liquor stores, right, the independent ones, which is what people are going to right now, getting wiped out of local packaged beer, which is awesome. So it should be.
Yep. Yeah, it's, you know, people are, and it also, you've got the psychology of the folks, of all of us who are doing this shelter in place. And some people look at it as, you know, okay, I need my core supplies, and alcohol is part of that core supply.
Apparently you need more of.
Apparently I do.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that, you know, when people are upset, they drink. When people are happy, they drink. So either way, you've got, no one's happy, certainly, but the alcohol is a staple, and people are bringing it home. I don't keep a lot of beer in the house, because I prefer the experience. I prefer to go out and have a beer with my friends. But yeah, I kind of wish I had more around here right now.
Mm-hmm. So if you were a grower, what would you be looking at from a potential sales and marketing angle here once things get moving again? What would you need to expect out of this whole scenario? Because it's not going to be business as usual. So how do you think people need to pivot?
You're absolutely right. It's not business as usual at all. I think that, well, first of all, it is going to have a delayed reaction. To your point earlier about the fact that the hops that are in the market now are in the market now. It's this coming season. We're not going to see those price changes happen that soon. And again, it's all predicated on the Pacific Northwest, unless they decide to proactively say, ooh, there's going to be a shortage. We're raising the prices now, which is entirely possible.
It is. History tells us that.
Uh-huh. Yep, they have the power.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like McDonald's controls the price of meat
right.
by purchases.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually, you know, I'm rethinking that now. We could see those prices change sooner than later. I think right now is the time, getting back to that community aspect, to be as much as you need to be separate from everyone, but just to be in touch with your community. If you have hops right now, reach out to your brewers, to your local brewers, and say, hey, I don't know if you're starting to see your supply chain dry up yet. It may be a little too soon for this, but reach out and say, look, I'm here, I'm local, I have this and this. Would hate to see you guys not have enough supply to continue supplying all of us locally with the beers we love. Let me know how I can help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you reach out there. And we talked about this with the elevator speeches. It's about how can I be there for you?
Right.
So reach out and see how you can help them in their time of need.
What do you think, though? What do you think about from a sales perspective and frankly, just a customer base perspective? There are going to be some small breweries that aren't going to survive this.
Sure.
And so there's going to be some attrition there, but you're going to, you know, as a grower, you're going to go back into the marketplace and trying to sell to these people who are, frankly, cash-strapped before. And now, what is the expectation? You know, so that as growers and salespeople, how do we need to change our mindset and our expectation of what we're going to get out of it?
Yeah, that's very interesting, because you can go out there and offer terms. And by terms, what I mean, you know, we've talked about handshake agreements as opposed to contracts. But one of the things you need to know up front with your sales process is, when do I expect to be paid? Is it cash on delivery? Is it, you know, I'll send you a bill and you have 30 days to pay before I add interest? Maybe for some of these very cash-strapped breweries, you need to go out there and say, look, you know, I know things are tight. I'm willing to give you 90 days, no interest, or, you know, something beyond what you've done in the past.
Mm-hmm.
In order to be a more attractive vendor for them.
Mm-hmm.
So that shows understanding. It shows that you get what's going on. And for folks that are just plain old in trouble on cash but need the product, it gives them an option. So that's one way you can do it. Granted, you're a farmer. You're cash strapped too. So that's not the easiest thing in the world to do. And you run the risk of uncollectibles at that point. If the person who needed those 90 days or 120 days to pay, when those days come around, still can't pay. You take risk, as you do with any business.
Well, I would say that I would take that risk. I would take the potential of not getting paid, even though I moved the product into the customer's hands, than having it sit in my cooler and having zero opportunity to make me money.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So.
Yep.
If things were different and I could say, you know what, I could move those hops to another brewer down the road or what have you, so I'm going to hedge my bets and keep them here instead of selling it to Joe Schmo over there who can't balance his checkbook. Yeah, okay, I get it, but I think we're in a little bit different time.
We are. We've got to help each other, for one thing. But you're right. I mean, having the hops out there with the brewer is one step closer to getting paid. And you're creating a relationship for the future there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got the other side of this as well, which is you may have contracts or handshake agreements with people right now who are suddenly shutting their doors. You know, maybe whatever they've got in the kettle is the last they plan to brew for a little while, and they're saying, you know what, we're gonna put a halt on things. they may have potential orders with you that they need to cancel or delay.
Mm-hmm.
So as a small business owner who's got inventory that you're waiting to deliver, that's a very real thing that all industries are facing right now, with shipments to businesses that no longer have an open door to receive those shipments.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to really go through your open order book and see what you've got pending to deliver and make sure that that's actually going to happen. And if it's not, you pivot. You look for other places to move that product. Or you work with that local brewer to hold it for a later date if you think it's realistic that they'll still be there.
That's interesting to think about. Let's think about pivoting in a much larger sense. And this was coming up too a bit on the Discord server about, what if I can't sell my hops to the few brewers that I already had? What do I do with them, right? And that goes back to, what does your secondary market look like? Mm-hmm. And is this an opportunity for you to look into new ways to move your product? And, you know, what is that? So, yeah, I understand you're selling to brewers, and if brewers aren't buying or aren't buying as much because of X, Y, or Z, what are you going to do with that crop? Well, I'm going to send it to extract. You could do that. Absolutely, you could do that. And now you've got a bittering extract product that will last 30 years in a can, right? No problem. But now you've really limited the market that is going to buy that. And it's not going to be your brewer down the street who's going to use extract. You're looking to sell to much larger brewers. So it's like, is that really a smart way to go? I don't know. And I mean, if you're talking tens of thousands of pounds of stuff that's going to go bad, maybe. But you're going to incur costs that way. So I would encourage people, when we're thinking about saying, well, what are my secondary markets, to look outside of the brewing industry for secondary markets, you know, like candles and soaps and whatever else is available, teas, I don't know. You know, necessity is the mother of invention, right? So get creative.
Absolutely. And, you know, we've talked to Mark Mountain View Hops about that kind of thing. He's a great example of that secondary market. That said, Mark just told us that a few of his upcoming farm stands have understandably been canceled.
Mm-hmm.
So the avenue he typically uses to move those secondary market products to some degree has been cut off. He's still got the website, of course, and I'm sure he's got other retailers he gets things into. Whether or not those are essential retailers that will stay open remains to be seen.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you that looking for secondary markets makes a lot of sense. And just in general, diversifying as a business makes a lot of sense. But there are challenges there as well.
And certainly it takes time to ramp that sort of thing,
yes,
to get into it. And it's not going to be a quick fix. I know that the ramifications of what we're experiencing aren't going to dissipate quickly either.
Sure.
So now is the time to be considering your options for your hop yard. And, you know, just like some breweries, some hop yards won't make it.
Yeah, it's very true. It's very true. And look, if you ever needed an excuse if you ever said, it's going to take me too long to learn how to make soaps, I don't have 3 weeks to spend in my basement. Well, guess what? Now you do.
You do. And hey, if you were a hopnologist and you joined the Discord server, then maybe you could just have a chat with all of our experts in order to figure out how to do things. So
maybe we'll have Mark do a soap making class for us.
A non-visual soap making class.
Yes. Yeah, no. Anyway. So yes, secondary markets, other ways. Because yes, this will impact the beer community, the beer business in every aspect. You think maybe it'll slow down seltzer production? I mean, wouldn't that be great?
I think if anything, it would ramp. And you know
it's
why?
It's easier to make.
Cheaper to make and way higher margins, and it's got a much wider audience. So I wouldn't at all underestimate that. And hell, I know some distilleries they're like, oh, we're making hand sanitizer. Mm-hmm. And they've gone to making straight up, you know, ethanol. And I was talking to Joe, our chemist buddy, former partner, and he works in the hand sanitizer space, let's put it that way, as a formulation chemist for the FDA.
He's the cleanest person you'll ever
meet. He's the cleanest person, yes, except from the mouth, because that man swears like you can't believe. Uh-huh. But, you know, he called me on Friday just to see how things were going, and he was telling me about all these other these distilleries opened up trying to make hand sanitizer, or that's what they're going to do. He's like, that's an FDA regulated product. He's like, you just can't start making hand sanitizer. So, yeah, you can make straight up ethanol, 170, 180 proof. Aside from that, that's about all you're going to do with it. If you think you're going to make your own branded hand sanitizer, unless the FDA relieves its restrictions, which I doubt they will.
No, you'll end up with more people sick than less if that happens.
That's exactly right, because you have to be able to prove that it kills X, Y, and Z. So, yep. Yeah, perhaps they would be better off just making drinkable booze to keep people happy.
Yeah, that would work. You know, I'm just connecting the dots on Joe here for a second, and it makes sense that he's involved in such a clean industry, because the only two things I see him do on a regular basis are go fishing nonstop, mm-hmm. which is stinky. Fun, but you know, you need to clean yourself. Mm. And he only eats pie from gas stations.
That's true.
So Joe, that's for you. I hope you're listening. But now I understand the perfect connection there with him and being part of a cleanliness industry. He needs that just to stay level. Mm-hmm. I'd say.
Yeah, just to be a normal person. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's not going to help his normalcy whatsoever.
Nope. Mm-mm. So what about let's turn into the brewery space just for a bit here. Mm-hmm. What about breweries that are, you know, I mean, they're continuing to brew at the moment, at least many of them are. From a cleanliness perspective, and you and I talked about this a bit before the call, from a restaurant perspective, there's an assumption that food service and brewing, they have such high levels of cleanliness standard anyway that it shouldn't really matter what they're producing, what they're putting together here should be safe. Mm-hmm. I guess that's a statement, and also I ended it with the should be safe in an effort to give you a springboard.
Oh, so from a brewing process perspective and from a brewing, you know, facility perspective, that they can't afford to be anything but near sterile and during any time. Just because, well, you've got what we call bioreactors, and other brewers call them fermenters. And the design of that system is to grow stuff. And in this case, we're growing yeast, but that's all we want. So the steps one has to take to clean and sanitize, and I'm not going to say sterilize because they sanitize. There can't be anything in those tanks but what the brewer wants to put in those tanks. So I have zero concern about any of this craziness really being impactful from a sanitation standpoint in a brew house and the product that gets put out. Just period. So we can not worry about that.
That's good.
Yep.
That's good. That, yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, that is a concern. People are reacting to everything that's going on wide degrees of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. From the, I'm going to lock myself in a closet and not touch anything anyone else has ever touched, to, you know, I've been home for 3 hours, I have to go out and meet my buddies.
Right.
You know, there's a wide range. But it's important that people understand that you don't have to worry about going back to the tap room when this is all over, and that, oh, you made that beer during the outbreak? Oh, I don't know about that.
Right. Yeah. It's the beer itself, the brew house, all that kind of stuff. There's no room for lack sanitation. So in the best of days. So in this case, I'm not worried about that. Okay. And if you've got a proper tap room with proper food code adherence, you know, you are sanitizing surfaces and blah, blah, blah every night. At the end of the shifts and all that kind of stuff. So as long as people are taking proper precautions in the public spaces, there should be little to no worry about transmission once we're through sort of the shelter-in-place craziness. But never say never. I mean, there could be some bad actors out there. There could be just some lazy people out there. And we do know that transmission of this virus is person-to-person, which is why we're trying to limit our contact and on surfaces. So just be smart. I mean, don't, if you're not feeling well, don't go out in public. Don't, you know, lick the handrails. Don't, yeah, just be smart. and realize that the places we like to go, these tap rooms, our breweries that are part of our community, in many cases the community center, at least certainly for our groups of friends, are going to need our support when they open up. And so I would highly encourage people to be smart, take their personal precautions if they are permitted to, and keep in mind that that these folks are going to need a little extra when we're able to get back to business as usual.
I couldn't have said it better. Be smart. You and I were using that phrase before we started recording this morning. It's just a matter of everyone just being smart. No one's invincible, no matter what age you are. You just need to protect yourself, protect everyone else, and come back together as a community and try and bring things back to where they were by supporting each other.
My spring break badge requires penicillin.